Ever try to get into one of Advertising Week's amazing sessions and suddenly hear that the room is at capacity? Now you can still experience it in real time. Listen to that keynote or panel as a live audio stream in the Advertising Week app, powered by Live365. Advertising Week Radio features sessions, podcast clips, curated music, and more, both during the shows and year-round. Visit aw.live365.com for easy access instructions. Live365, the world's audio.
You're listening to AW360, a podcast from Advertising Week. Recorded in studio and live at Advertising Week's global events, AW360 features thought leadership conversations with the best and the brightest in the advertising, marketing, and technologies industries each and every week. If you enjoy AW360, we'd appreciate it if you took the time to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and maybe even leave a positive review. Thanks for listening.
Ellie, welcome to the AW360 podcast. I'm so pleased to have you on today, especially given the topic we're going to be talking about.
I'm really pleased to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So you're Global Growth Director at Zinteo. Tell me a little bit about what you do there first.
So Zinteo is an advisory firm. We work with some of the world's largest businesses on what we call people and planet growth. And that is looking at where you find the intersection between driving purposeful work, be that around sustainability or leadership and events or systems and collaboration, with how you grow top line impact. So somewhere around good growth and commercial outcomes with a social impact lens.
We're going to talk about ESG messaging today, which, you know, for those who don't know, which I hope is very, very few, is environmental, social, and governance. Tell me, why is this important to you and important to Zinteo?
I think ESG is really critical because what we're starting to see as individuals, as businesses, and as wider ecosystems, be that across the public sector or within the private sector or just as a planet, we are starting to realize the urgency of our role and our roles in ensuring that we have a population that can thrive in the future. And the role of businesses specifically in terms of the way that we work with them as Zinteo is thinking about how our mission as businesses, how our commercial impact as businesses can enable positive change as well as allowing us to exist as players. So at the moment, the way that we're focusing on that is how do we think about positive impact in a way which integrates into business operations rather than being what we used to call CSR, corporate social responsibility, which was an add-on. So how can we make sure that everything we're doing as a business is pointing in the direction of positive impact without detracting from our commercial growth opportunity? How do we make purposeful work move from a cost center into a revenue opportunity for businesses? And that's, I think, and the sort of theory of change that we have, the way that we can make sure that we can deliver things like the Sustainable Development Goals and things like the outcomes that we need to see as a planet and as a population through commercial activity.
And so can you give me an example of how you would go about doing that? And I think further to that, how you would implement that into a growth strategy?
Yeah, there are some fantastic examples, and I'm sure we'll get into those in due course. But some of the things we think about when we're working with businesses is how can we make purpose something that we think about in our day-to-day? How is it something that our sales team go out and sell? And how is it something which makes sense to everyone in the business? So we start with thinking about what the market opportunity is quite often. We will have a passion and a real purposeful drive typically at the top and within individuals. But if we can't translate that into something we do in our day-to-day, we quite often find that it's an action that gets a bit stalled after the first strategy. So the first step we always do is to think about, as a business, how does this matter to our business and where does it matter and who are the stakeholders that we're talking to? So, for example, if we're thinking about a food business? How do we make sure that we're not just selling food and then on the side we're sponsoring a school to do a fun run? How instead do we think, what are the opportunities here for thinking through our supply chain about how they grow the food in a way that is better for planet? What are the opportunities for us to think about our suppliers and how the employment of those people is going to be better, to give them job security, to give them health access, to give them bank accounts? How do we think about implementing positive outcomes through the work that we're doing day to day? And then the same goes once we've come up with a strategy around those kind of things and really systemic thinking around the work that we do and how we can have a positive impact in every layer of that, then we can start thinking about, okay, what are the new market opportunities? How do we turn circular economy models into something we can do as a business so that we can leverage a position which is in leadership against our competitors, but also have huge positive impact and comply with the regulation that's coming our way? And the way we think about that is very much, what is the challenge ahead of us? What are we doing as a business? How can we think about solutions in a way that matters to everyone and isn't just something they have to do on a Friday afternoon? And then who are the people that are going to buy this? And how does it speak to what our customers want in the place where they are? We don't want to create solutions for businesses which are asking customers to do the work and to educate themselves. We want to meet those people where they are and say, hey, we see what you're grappling with. We have a solution here which works for you, which works for us, and which works for the planet, and creates a really resilient opportunity moving forward. And I think the other part to that, particularly in Europe and increasingly in the US, and we are seeing to a greater extent in Asia and South Asia, we're starting to see regulation come through. So as businesses, we need to be compliant with regulation. And if we start to do that at the point where regulation comes in, we're going to be on the back foot against our competitors. So how can we really think about what regulation are we going to see coming in, and how can we get ahead in order to be fully compliant, and not only compliant, but leading in the regulatory space so that we're ready to go when that comes in and we're already leading?
It feels to me like the regulations and what they entail and what consumers want and what that entails are a little bit different. You know, the regulations are, you know, maybe a little looser than I think maybe sometimes what the consumers want, especially here in the States. I think a lot of the younger people here in the States, I think, are far more eager to really see some action than the regulations would be dictating at the moment. What are you seeing over in Europe that is, you know, kind of relevant to that? Are regulations aligning with what the consumers are wanting?
I'd say that regulatory progress is slightly faster in Europe versus the US, in the sense that we already have the Green Deal being worked on actively. I wouldn't be surprised if the US followed fairly rapidly, but I think you are really right to highlight the gap between consumers and regulation, and in two ways. First of all, I think you're right that the younger generation certainly are calling for more purposeful business, for more challenging regulations. And for they have an expectation that companies are going to do better. And that is something which is reflected consistently across the globe in that young people group, but also in other sections of society. We certainly, as a population of the globe, say that we demand more from business. We expect both business and public sector to do more. And we also say we will pay more for products which are better created, for services that are better built. And when I say better, I mean with a view on the impact on environment and on society. Now, we say we will. The reality is that there is an enormous say-do gap. And that means that whilst we are very much of the intention to spend more and buying better, even if we can afford it, we still typically don't, with small gaps where some people do, but it's a smaller niche of the market. So at the moment, what we're dealing with is, how do we build marketplaces where people actually say what they do, or rather do what they say? And that means we have to know more about what customers want. And I think what we've tried to do for so long as businesses is transform the way that customers buy our product simply by asking them to pay more because it does better, without changing what the product is. And the reality is, increasingly, we're going to need to find ways to deliver a product in a better way, or to deliver a service in a more thoughtful way, which enables consumers to actually do what they say. Now, an example of that is the refill market. So refill and reuse is a very good solution for plastics. We have too much virgin plastic. We have regulation coming in, which is saying we can't have as much virgin plastic. We know how to recycle some plastics. We know how to recycle other plastics a bit more in a more expensive way. But there is this third way, which is that we come up with a refill solution for, let's say, rice or home cleaning products, whereby you have a single container and it is refilled. It's kind of starting to take off in a minor way in a very motivated consumer audience, but it's got real limitations on scale. And I believe that is because we're trying to make people buy in the same way they always have, but suddenly introduce refill. What we're not doing is thinking, hang on, how could we think around this problem better so that refill becomes something that isn't complicated or difficult and you can't get to the store and have forgotten your container and therefore it's all gone wrong? How do we make it easier for the consumer to buy better and to do better in terms of their planetary impact? And I think that's where the real gap is at the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, your point earlier about not making it the consumer doing extra work to make all of this happen is just, you know, it immediately gets me thinking about all the things that I try and do during the course of my day to be a better consumer when it comes to sustainability. And, you know, there are so many extra things now that we seem to have to think about that it makes shopping and any sort of retail interaction a lot more complex than it used to be. Not complicated, but simply complex. All the considerations that you have to make. Who do you think, in your mind, are brands that are really leading the way and doing a good job? And they can be, you know, people you've worked with or just people you have, just brands that you've observed out in the marketplace that are really killing it.
There are so many, but I'll name a few. There's a supermarket organization. They have a number of brands called Ahold Delhaize, and they are headquartered in the Netherlands, but they have stores in the US. I can't remember the brand name of the stores, but they have a fantastic program which rewards customers for buying healthier and more sustainable products. So think of it as a customer reward scheme that you see in every supermarket brand, but you get extra points or bonus points for living healthier or buying more sustainably sourced food. I think that's really brilliant. We work with a client called Upfield. They make spreads like County Croc and Flora and Vitalife and things like that. And they put carbon accounting on the product, which I think is a really useful way for consumers to start to understand the difference between different products, albeit limited to their own products. I think Danone has a really interesting initiative around One Planet, One Health, where they really try and align business operations with health and well-being and responsible consumption. And then the king of it all is Patagonia, where they've put nature on the board as a stakeholder. They have nature and sustainability considered in every major decision-making part of the business. And that's it's an example of what you can do if you really put your mind to it while still making profit, although they've put all their profits now into an NGO, as far as I'm aware. So there are some really fantastic examples of businesses that are doing it well and they're kind of killing it on that. But there's a combination of two things. I think one is businesses that are doing it well and then finding really good ways to talk about it, and they're more limited. And then there are businesses that are doing it really well and doing it in a way that drives new market, not just kind of top line growth, but also cost out, so reducing that bottom line impact, which I think is really exciting.
You know, I'm always curious to find out what experts in this particular field think about messaging when it comes to sustainability. And I'm going to pose this question to you. Do you think that, you know, we see several approaches from brands when it comes to their particular marketing and the angles they take and sort of what they put out into the world? And thinking especially of Western markets, do you think when a company puts out a product, and it doesn't really matter what it is, but when they're putting out a product and let's say they're, you know, they've reduced the amount of plastics or, you know, let's just call it plastics in a product that typically would have had, you know, quite a bit of plastics, you know, contained in its manufacture process. And they put it out in the world and then they, you know, they make a big deal about the reduced amount of plastics in it. Do you think that is as effective as simply changing their ways across time, you know, and just being better about the manufacturing process and just kind of being a better company overall?
I love that question because I thought you were going on to a greenwashing question. And actually, the question is, if they're doing good works, should they shout about it? And my answer is, I think the shouting part is almost as important as doing the work, because it is vital that we transform business and that we transform supply chains and that we change regulation and all of those great things. But if we don't see our peers and those above and below us in size and scale doing better, and we don't know that they're doing better, we tend not to think we have to either. There is something very contagious or competitive or keeping up with the market about seeing what your competitors are doing and then catching up, keeping up, and then beating them. And that is a real driving force in sustainability. In the absence of regulation, we've seen corporations driving change quicker than regulation has recently. So I think it is of vital importance that we hear about what businesses are doing. What I think we miss the mark on is how we talk about those things to consumers. Because typically, I don't think messages around, say, for example, reduced plastics are getting through to consumer in a way that's really exciting. Mm-hmm. I think we read it and we kind of go, oh, that's nice. I don't know if it makes us buy again. It might. And I'm sure there's a ton of work about that. But I think that we could get far more interesting about our messaging and our storytelling and the narratives piece around sustainability impact, because at the moment it's still vested in this very risk averse, very corporate language. And there are some wonderful stories about the work that people are doing, whether it's in regenerative agriculture or in plastic circularity. There are some great stories, and you know as well as anyone that it's all about the way you tell the story, right? And I think the more we can do better at that, with when it's backed up by good quality work, the better. But if it's simply a case of greenwashing, then I'd rather they spend the time doing the good work.
When it comes to, say, if you had to go to a brand, say a brand came to you and said, you know, we're looking to find a way to implement sustainability into our future growth. We want to be ready for the future. Here's where we are. What would their next steps be? You know, let's say they're not in a good space. You know, they're not known for being sustainable. Let's, in fact, take it a step further and say they're not even remotely known for good sustainability practices. Yeah. Where would they start?
I think with a business like that, where they were actually known for not being sustainable, we'd have to think about, and actually in the case of a business that was agnostic, we'd think about doing something called a double materiality assessment, which would assess how they were performing in terms of the environmental or social impact, but also the impact that might have on brand. So we'd look at where they could have the biggest impact if they started today on turning things around. Because the quickest way to get momentum is to do the easier, cheaper things that have the biggest impact. And once you've done those, not only do you have a lot of movement, you also have an ability to point to something that's had an impact. So it's always got to be quite strategic when you start out. And then I think what you would do is you'd be able to point to the business case around some of the work that you'd already done and take to your board a picture of what this could look like over 10 years, at which point you start to tick off some of that harder to reach fruit, if you like, and think about how to integrate much more into your business planning. So how do you think about tackling the business challenges you have with sustainability solutions? For example, Google and Apple buy 100% renewable energy for their data centers. That means that they are, and they generate their own energy for what it's worth. So they're not only cutting their energy bill, they're also setting new standards for industry-wide sustainability practice, and they're doing something which they can then use as a PR opportunity should they want to, but they're practicing what they preach. So I think what you have to do is do some of the easy stuff right away, then think about what your strategy is over the 10-year period, I guess, or whatever period you want to, and then think about how you integrate that strategy into your day-to-day business so that it becomes something that doesn't just sit in a cost area, so that it becomes something that is useful to everybody's business challenges.
Amazing. And taking a look ahead and with a mind towards something we were talking about earlier, you know, all the regulations and the regulatory mandates that are kind of present out in the world, and there's many, but let's just take the 2030 goal. In your mind, and this is, you know, no points off if you're wrong, Do you think we're going to make it in terms of meeting that goal?
I think I waver on this a lot, and some days I'm really optimistic and some days I'm not. I think that we will, 2030, I think we'll miss. If we were looking at some of the more far out goals, 2050 goals and so on, I think we will be able to achieve them, but we will be late for them. And as a result, we will be feeling the effects of climate change and of water loss and scarcity and of all of those awful things that are coming. But I do genuinely believe that we will manage to turn it around, but that will be with the limitations of things that we then can't reverse. So I'm on the fence today.
Fair enough. Great answer. Well, Ellie, this has been fascinating stuff. I appreciate you taking the time, and this was a great conversation. Thank you so much for taking part.
Thanks, Richard.
Thanks for listening to AW360. For more podcasts like this one, be sure to check out Advertising Week's ever-growing roster of podcasts for the advertising, marketing, and technology industries, including our flagship podcast, Great Minds. You can find those at www.advertisingweek.com/podcasts.